much about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
When you're ready to launch out into the unknown, possibly the best place to begin is in a nursing home or a care center for the elderly. One reason is simply this. The elderly really receive you quite well. I think it's because they already know how vulnerable they are. They're lonely, and they long for touch. So as clowns, we take seriously what Jesus said in Matthew 25. I'll put this in my own words.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
One, two, three.
Bad boy!
Four, five, six.
V.I.G.
I'm like sticking out my tongue a lot and stuff like that. And like dancing with teddy bears and stuff like that. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
God damn it.
Sometimes I just love to chill and watch TV.
Yeah.
You know, like that. Like I get so excited. Does anybody else like get excited just to get in bed and get warm and fuzzy with your blankie? And yeah.
I loathe you in ways that are unquantifiable.
And now...
Hey, man, where are you going? You're missing the best part.
Our feature presentation.
Not sure that's true.
Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Monday morning, the 18th of September.
Happy Monday.
Right?
How was the weekend?
Is it Monday fun day or Sunday fun day?
I think it's Sunday, but let's make it Monday.
They both rhyme.
Let's make it a thing.
And we love that. We love rhymes.
We do.
Weekend good, you?
Since when? Yeah, great.
Since when
do we love rhymes?
We don't. I'm just
okay.
Saying. No, I'm saying it drives me. That's one of my pet peeves.
Right.
Is dads and grads.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If it rhymes, they stick with it for the rest of the
if
life.
If it rhymes, yeah. It shines.
That's I've heard that.
See?
I don't like it, but I have heard it.
Yeah.
Let's start today's show in Massachusetts. Police in Massachusetts.
Do we have to?
Well, I mean, yes.
Because it's going to be bad.
Define bad. I love it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Massachusetts State Police told the television station that was covering this that Jose Jimenez, 26, of Lawrence, was wanted for assault and battery with a dangerous weapon after an incident last week when he ran over a police officer's foot while fleeing a traffic stop.
Yeah.
And then he led police on a second chase. And the end of the second chase, you always sort of try and guess, I do at least, how will this end?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time it's a spike strip and they just give themselves up and they back up. Most of the time it's that. Every once in a while it's something weird and completely unpredictable. And that's what our man Jose did on this particular car chase.
A suspect in a wild police chase makes an unusual pit stop.
Boston 25 News reporter Christine McCarthy is live in Westwood where Christine, this suspect walked into an electronics business with an odd request.
All right, so he's leading police on a chase.
Okay.
Parks the car.
Uh-huh.
Gets out and runs into a business.
An electronics business.
Yes.
That's right. The suspect calmly walked into this Westwood business here behind me as if nothing were out of place. Asked them if they were hiring, and sure enough, they were.
So he walks into the business, and he puts his arm on the counter.
Uh-huh.
And I think it covers it in the story a little bit later, but not out of breath.
No, just chilling.
Not scared.
Just wants to have a...
Hey, hiring?
An application. Right?
And the boss goes, yeah, hiring. And they go to the boss's office to have a conversation about him working there.
No.
Cool as a cucumber. No sweaty hands. Clean shirt.
Carefree, his arms resting casually on the front desk, this job applicant raises no red flags when he asks if Osprey Wireless is hiring.
Very interesting job interview, to say the least.
Surveillance video at the Westwood business shows general manager Jeff Morin lead him into his office where the potential hire picks up a pen and fills out an application.
How crazy is that? So the police are outside looking for him, and he walks into a business and says, are you guys hiring? And the boss says, yes, come into my office, and he's filling out an application to work there.
So if the police were to look in there, they don't see him.
Right.
He's in a back office.
Correct.
Filling out his address.
Genius.
Brilliant.
Well, not filling out his address, probably brilliant.
Well, probably not, yeah.
But brilliant because who would ever in a million years think that that's the
and
way he would
be
go?
That calm?
Right. There's something wrong with that
guy.
Oh,
he's a sociopath.
Yeah.
The interview was going well if it weren't for the search outside following a police chase.
He was going to have the job.
Yeah. He was starting that day.
The manager was very happy with him and was going to give him a schedule and a little badge or whatever they have.
And the wanted man... That's right, this guy, accused of running over a trooper's foot last Thursday during a traffic stop.
So I said, boy, there goes a police dog by the window. He goes, let me see.
I just got a bad feeling. Just something didn't feel right.
All right. Now, this is another person in the office.
An employee there.
Yes. So
okay.
The employee there saw the guy come in, saw the manager take him into his office, and then sees the police outside and the dogs, and they're clearly looking. They're searching for somebody. So he's the one that
would
alerts them.
Even cross your mind, like, oh, maybe it's the dude in the interview?
I don't think so.
Oh, my God.
I don't think it would ever come to my mind, because why would a guy running from the police come in slowly and calmly and go in and apply for a job?
Service manager Brian Carpenter approached state police, who'd been searching 26-year-old Jose Jimenez's ditched car, seizing wads of cash.
I described to him what he looked like.
So that guy goes out and engages with police and says, hey, what? What are you doing?
What a snitch.
Oh, you're looking for a guy. Snitches get stitches, right?
Yep.
You're looking for a guy. They show him a picture.
And he showed me a picture and said, yeah, no, that looks like him.
8 minutes into the interview, police enter.
They grab him, and he starts to tussle with them. And the other two come in, guns in hand, and they said to him, you didn't think that we weren't going to find you, did you?
As a cuffed Jimenez is escorted outside, a celebratory high five inside. The Lawrence man is loaded into a cruiser, a relief no one was hurt.
We're very fortunate that that's how it ended for us anyway. Not for him, but for us.
How bummed is that guy? He was going to hire him.
Right?
He thought
now
he had,
I have to find someone else.
It's like Jose was willing to work weekends. Really like the guy.
Hey, call me when you get out. That's a terrible terrible ending, but could you have ever, if I gave you a million guesses, would you ever have thought of that?
No. That's brilliant.
That's why I love it. Let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
I'd like to punch him in the face.
I admire him a little bit.
Yeah, a little
except
bit.
Except that he ran over a cop's foot, so that's not good.
Well, feet.
I mean, yeah, feet.
Thank you.
Yeah. On the program today, it's Monday, so we check in with Harvey Levin from TMZ like we do. Complete recap of the Emmys. Did you watch those all last night?
I did.
All 3 hours?
I did.
You like it?
It was just there. I was telling Chip there was no big moment, no big speech, no big... It was just there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good solid five.
I mean...
It wasn't horrible, but it certainly wasn't very entertaining.
No.
We're going to have Corbett Redford in the studio. He is the director and producer of a new movie called Turn It Around, the story of East Bay Punk.
Awesome.
And it's a fascinating documentary, and Green Day is behind it. Green Day came out of that scene, which is hard to imagine. And then they were playing the Rose Bowl this past week.
Yeah, they were.
Andrew Siciliano joins us in studio to recap the NFL weekend.
How'd your team do?
We won.
Good.
Arizona Cardinals won.
Good.
How about yours?
One.
Okay.
Chip?
One.
Yeah, they won.
Yeah, they won.
They did. Oh, you're excited they didn't. They really did.
Oh, I didn't realize
they look pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Also on the program today, Mike Shinoda from Linkin Park. This is sort of his first interview after everything that happened with Chester, and he's going to let you know about an event that they're having in honor of Chester.
Excellent.
So that's coming up this morning. We'll take a break. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 551, and Ralph Garman is here now for a look at the showbiz beat.
It's Monday. That means we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office chart for the second week in a row. It remains at the top with $60 million.
Wow, that's crazy good.
Yeah, it's crazy good for a second week. American Assassin debuted with $14.8 million. That made it number two. Mother came in at number three in its debut with $7.5 million. Home Again, Hitman's Bodyguard, Annabelle Creation, Wind River, Leap, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Dunkirk were your top 10 films at the box office. Speaking of films, Jamie Lee Curtis has announced she'll be back as Laurie Strode in another Halloween movie. Finally, another Halloween movie. She went on Twitter to post a picture of her standing there looking pretty terrific, by the way. 40 years after she played the role, same porch, same clothes, same issues. 40 years later, she said. They're saying this is going to be the last Halloween movie. I said, yeah, right.
See how it does.
I found out last night, by the way, that she died in the last Halloween movie.
I just said to Chip, I said, didn't she? So, with the ghost?
Stop it. Just stop it.
Maybe she didn't die, I think is the point here.
Right. Yeah. Kingsman, it could happen.
Right.
Speaking of dying, legendary character actor Harry Dean Stanton died on Friday at the age of 91. His career spanned more than 60 years in Hollywood and roles in about 140 films, even more television. Of course, Twin Peaks, Big Love, he was terrific in that. Molly Ringwald's dad in Pretty in Pink, Repo Man, Alien, Escape from New York. So many great roles. Smoked like a chimney, drank like a fish. Passed away at 91. Just goes to show you, man, nobody knows.
Right.
And if you're a wrestling fan, you know the name Bobby the Brain Heenan. He's a legendary character in WWE wrestling. Manager of Andre the Giant. Managed Big John Studd, King Cog Bundy, Ravishing Rick, Mr. Perfect. He passed away at the age of 73 over the weekend, so we say goodbye to him. Last night, of course, was the Emmys. And no big surprises. I guess Handmaid's Tale, winning for Outstanding Drama Series was the biggest surprise of the evening in terms of the major categories. Hulu, very happy. Elizabeth Moss also won for Lead Actress in a Drama Series for that same role. Sterling K. Brown won for This Is Us, Outstanding Lead Actor in a Drama Series. When it came to comedy, no surprise there. Veep won again for Outstanding Comedy Series. Julia Louis-Dreyfus broke a record last night, winning her sixth consecutive Emmy for Lead Actress in a Comedy Series.
Yay!
Well-deserved. Lead Actor in a Comedy Series went to Donald Glover for his work in Atlanta. Kate McKinnon and Alec Baldwin both picked up Supporting Actor and Actress Awards for their work on Saturday Night Live. So, congratulations to all the winners. And Sean Spicer came out. Wasn't that adorable?
No.
So funny, sure, but he came out and he was talking just like it was a press conference.
Sure wasn't.
Remember when he used to lie at all those press conferences and ruined our faith in democracy and the free press?
Yep.
Oh, but we had so much fun with him now, didn't we all? What was that all about?
I don't know.
It disturbs me to no end that we're making him and the Mooch
They're cuddly. Our friends.
It does feel weird to have them in on the joke.
Benefiting
so
from
yes.
the joke.
Yes.
It's
yes.
not about they're in on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're getting to be celebrities now and go to award shows and have a good time and everyone glad had him and pat him on the back and buy him a drink.
Yeah.
They would still be in those jobs if they weren't fired.
Of course.
They would still be doing it, lying to the people, making the press out to be the enemy. That's BS that they're being exalted.
Right.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Right, Allie?
Good night.
You want to get upset more?
No. A little bit.
Remember Danielle Brigoli?
You don't even need to do this story. I refuse to do it the whole week I filled in with
catch
you.
Catch me outside.
For
how
you.
About that?
Don't do it. Don't do it.
She's got a new record deal with Atlantic Records.
Right?
Atlantic Records picked her up.
Who at Atlantic Records said, you know what, this is the person right here?
Well, I guess they were impressed by her 21 million views of her new music video for her new song, These Hoes.
Right.
These Hoes features 14-year-old Danielle, but she's using her rap name in it. Bad Baby.
Yeah.
B-H-A-D-B-H-A-B-I-B.
She likes to spell stuff wrong.
She sure does because it's funny.
Or she doesn't know better.
Or she doesn't know how to spell. So, let's all cash her outside. How about that?
These hoes be like, see me in a bank. They talking that but don't say it in person. Won't catch me off guard on no boulevard. Four in my car, am I driving my guard? Water dripping, come take a peek. You in a trailer, hope but you can't compete. I'm riding solo, don't need no one but me. Run up a check, yeah, we running up. Red cup.
Someone in the Atlantic Records said yes.
Better than Taylor Swift. That's all I got to say.
That's a tough one.
No, she's better. I'm coming on vacation for that one.
Catch me outside. How about that?
And Paul McCartney was playing a little concert in Madison Square Garden Friday night. This guy still rocks. You can say what you want. But he's, I don't know, what's he, 70?
Oh, at least, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
And he still plays for over 2 hours. Crushed it, by all accounts, Madison Square Garden. Had a couple pals come out and do the Beatles classic, I Saw Her Standing There. Those guys were Steve Van Zandt, little Steve, and a guy named Bruce Springsteen came out on stage.
All right.
Joined Paul. They had such a good time, they decided to do it twice. They did the song way through, and then went back and did it again.
No kidding.
And then Bruce killed Paul McCartney.
I don't think that's what happened. I don't think so.
That's what he's saying.
No.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Oh, Kevin, it's Ronaldo's birthday. How are you going to celebrate? What do? Do you just sit down and have your maid translate Spanish-speaking soccer broadcasts for
you? All right, is this Ronaldo from Brazil or is this Cristiano Ronaldo?
It's Ronaldo. Oh, no.
Which one
it's
is
Ronaldo,
it?
It's Ronaldo.
Oh, then I'm in.
You know, Ronaldo. He always signs everything with a Z. He takes his sword and he makes that Z everywhere.
That's Zorro.
Oh.
Yeah, it's completely different.
Do we know which one it is?
It just says soccer player Ronaldo.
It would be the Brazilian one, then. And yes, I'm in.
You out of your tree, you think I care enough to know which soccer player named Ronaldo it is. Well, I would make this much rat's ass of an effort to find out which Ronaldo soccer player we're talking about.
But for me, one of them is my mortal enemy and one of them is great.
Well,
so I had to decipher which one it was.
Figure
and
he's the one.
He's the one from Brazil and he's great.
Figure it out and fall down and get a yellow card or whatever the F you do.
Not interested.
Lucas Graham is 29 years old today. Jada Pinkett Smith is 46. James Marsden's 44. Lance Armstrong has one ball. Jason Sudeikis is 42. Aisha Tyler is 47 years old. And Exhibit? Oh, that's not how exhibit is spelled at all.
I mean, it's how he spells it.
But that's incorrect.
Okay.
It's an incorrect spelling. It's like bad baby. It's just wrong. He's 43 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Coming up a little bit later on this morning, as a matter of fact, in the next hour, Corbett Redford is going to be here about the movie Turn It Around, about the punk scene in the Bay Area.
Where
Green Day came from. Very excited about that. Plus, Andrew Siciliano joins us to talk NFL Week 2. Right now, it's time for Harvey Levin from TMZ.com. We talk to you, Harvey, every single Monday. How are you today?
I'm good, guys. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. You want to start with Kevin Hart?
Yeah, I mean, wow, this is a, how to start this story.
Yeah.
So Kevin issued he put out a video, I think on Friday, and it was weird. He was apologizing to his wife and his kids for putting himself in a situation, and he kind of smelled what was going on, right?
He was getting out ahead of something.
Yeah. So we found out that the FBI is investigating an extortion plot against Kevin Hart that somebody was trying to sell, basically to keep us, in order for Kevin to keep a video secret, he'd have to pay seven figures. It actually got to eight figures at one point, but then
wow.
They lowered it. Yeah. And I can tell you what's on this video.
Yeah, what did you mean by well-produced, it said in your story?
Well, here's what I mean. It is a video that has, you know, really slick cuts in it. It's got, you know, B-roll is when you put pictures over what, you know, you're hearing.
Right.
They have that. This is somebody who didn't just slap something together. It's produced. I mean, you see it. It begins with a picture of Kevin and a woman, and they're very cozy. I mean, she's, you know, they're kind of hugging each other. And then it just cuts, and it cuts to a bedroom scene. And the bedroom scene, you don't see anybody in the bed, but something's going on in the bed for sure.
But that was my next question is, it says in your article that you can't really tell it's him.
Well, no. In the bed, you can't even see anybody.
Okay.
So you have no idea who's in the bed. Then it cuts again to somebody who's walking around naked, a guy, and then he puts his clothes on. And I can tell you that people connected with Kevin are even saying, look, you know, it sure looks like him. It definitely looks like him.
Right.
But you can't, you know, there's a cut there. So, you know, the question is the person, we don't know who was in the bed. I mean, you just don't know. But anyway, it's obviously a situation where the person is trying to extort him. And, you know, Kevin has gotten out in front of it. And, you know, he's saying, look, you know, I am the victim of extortion. But at the same time, you know, his wife is pregnant. And what they've done in the video is, you know, the person, whoever cut this thing, seems really enraged at him. And they're saying he's a hypocrite. And they put in, at parts, they're putting in audio of Kevin's interviews over the last year where he says, in my first marriage I cheated, but then I learned you shouldn't do it anymore. I was too young back then. I don't do it anymore. But I don't do it anymore partly because, you know, it's too easy to get caught.
So you're saying they put that over this actual video of him allegedly cheating again?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back and forth like that, and that's why I say highly produced.
Listen, it's hard to feel bad for a man that cheated on his first wife with this wife, and now he's cheating on someone that's extorting him. it's kind of hard to feel bad for the dude at this point.
Let me just say real quickly, the FBI is not saying that the woman in the tape is the extortionist. You know,
you think there may be a third party that is responsible for the videotaping and editing?
They're not saying.
Okay.
I mean, look, it could be, you know, obviously the person who is the other party there could be, but at the same time, maybe somebody secretly put an iPhone there, or they got into her iPhone, maybe she taped it, so there are different scenarios. So we don't know who the alleged extortionist is, but I do know that the FBI has its sights set on somebody they believe is a suspect.
Is it possible that that this video still may come out even though the FBI is investigating it,
yes,
and it still does damage to Kevin Hart?
They are pushing this and sending it various places. They sent it to us, and we're not going to put up the bedroom scenes. But because, you know, the other thing is, it's very clear that that Kevin didn't know he was being taped, at the very least. But, you know, they are sending it around, and it's kind of making its way around right now.
Yeah. Let's Kevin, keep your weenie out of people that aren't your wife, and maybe this won't happen.
You're talking to me?
Not you, Kevin.
Okay.
You as well, Kevin. It's a good standard to live by.
All right, Harvey, let's move on to the Emmys last night, and let's talk about Stephen Colbert bringing out Sean Spicer.
That was hilarious.
Was it?
Did you see the crowd?
Nobody's going to, they're not going to applaud anybody connected with Trump.
I mean, I couldn't really gauge the audience's interest in Donald Trump. I feel like they were pretty supportive.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But when he came out, you did see a lot of people's reaction were just like, oh my God, what's happening?
I think it's funny. I think it's hilarious that, I mean, the premise was he's talking about what a huge audience that they're having for the Emmys. So Spicer comes out and he kind of doubles down the way Trump did on the, you know, a huge audience of the inauguration. I thought it was a funny moment. It's not going to be as funny as TMZ today because Anthony Scaramucci is hosting.
Oh, Harvey.
Come on.
For the
you
love of
like
God,
that.
Why are we giving these guys a redemption tour?
Come on. It's funny.
It's not funny. These are people that willfully chose to lie to the American people and make the press out to be
enemy. Scaramucci was in for 5 minutes.
Why are you having him on?
Because he's funny.
Oh, Harvey, I can't.
This is the beautiful thing about politics. The beautiful thing about politics is it rubs people the right way or the wrong way in an extreme passion.
Absolutely. Hey, Ali, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
If Michelle Obama wanted to host TMZ Live, just if she did, would you have a problem with that?
Did she make the press the enemy and lie to the people?
No, but he didn't do that. Scaramucci didn't do that.
Okay.
I'd agree to disagree.
Okay.
No, but he didn't. I mean, Scaramucci didn't do that. Scaramucci actually was the only one that seemed to be making peace with the press. But again, he was in for 5 minutes. He will have a shorter tenure even on TMZ today.
How did that conversation go when you talked to him?
Hey, yes.
Do you want to host TMZ? And he said yes.
Yes.
That's weird. All right, Harvey Levin, the Twitter account is at Harvey Levin TMZ. The website is TMZ.com. You can watch TMZ throughout the day on Fox, and that's where Scaramucci is going to be. TMZ Live at 4 p.m. on Fox. TMZ Sports Monday to Friday at midnight on Fox Sports 1. And the TV show Objectified, which came back last night. I recorded it, but I didn't have time to watch it.
Oh, my God. I'd love to know what you think.
I'll let you know next time because Judge Judy was on, and that's fascinating to me because I love her.
Shoot me an email.
I will. All right. Thank you, Harvey. We always appreciate your time. I don't know if you heard on Friday, we were playing some tape of Alex Jones from Infowars.com.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who believes in every conspiracy that anyone makes up ever.
Yeah. Newtown, all those kids that were killed, those were all actors.
Actors, right. Of course, 9/11, Inside Job, the whole thing. I mean, he's just whatever.
Just despicable.
Whatever comes along, he will wholeheartedly believe in. But he took it even a step further. I've never heard anyone claim that a president was being poisoned, let alone all presidents are being poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what Alex Jones came up with.
Ladies and gentlemen, I was told this by high-level sources, and it was evident, and especially after Reagan was shot in his first year in office, when he was acting like Trump and doing the right things, that he never really recovered. They gave him cold blood. And it's a transfusion that causes brain damage.
Did you know any of that? Did you know they gave him cold blood?
I didn't. And I would think you'd notice as a president that you're getting a blood transfusion. But
they slowly gave him small amounts of sedatives. It's known that most presidents end up getting drugged.
Okay, is that known?
Nope.
Okay.
Small dosages of sedatives till they build it up. Trump's such a bull. He hasn't fully understood it yet, but I've talked to people, multiple ones, that, and they believe that they are putting a slow sedative that they're building up that's also addictive in his Diet Cokes.
Did you know that?
No, but it makes sense because he loves Diet Coke.
Right?
Yeah.
So I thought we would check in with Alex Jones just to see if there's any clarification on that. Alex, good morning.
You seem shocked by the truth, as if you're not even aware of what's happening around you.
Well, I mean, I feel like...
startling to me that you could be so obtuse.
I feel like people watch the president's health, all of the president's health, very, very closely.
Who's watching the president's health? Are you watching the president's health?
Well, no, but I'm not a doctor.
Well, you have to keep in mind that these people are constantly surrounded by a group of deep state operatives that are working inside the White House and the government in general, and they are constantly affecting and poisoning this man throughout his daily behavior. So who is watching him if the ones around him are actually the ones who are doing the attacking?
So you mean that Obama was drugged, Bush was drugged, everybody?
I told you, it's well known that they all get drugged. All presidents get drugged throughout the course of their administration.
That's the first time I've heard of it. I don't know that it's well known.
They all get drugged,
okay,
and their sphincters are replaced with plexiglass. We all know this.
Wait, what?
They're given a plexiglass tube in place of their sphincter.
Why?
We all know this. Because
why do they
it's
do
the
that?
Only way they can ensure that every president is able to keep the secrets of the state, like the fact that all of the Uber drivers now are actually hawks in human disguise. We can't have these facts come out. It would just terrify the populace. They'd be running in the street. They would be attacking and looting because they would know the truth, like all pillows are filled with Lady Gaga's underarm shavings.
What?
Oh,
exactly.
Wow.
If you
gross.
Knew that, you'd be furious.
I don't want to use my pillow.
Right? That's
right.
True.
We'd be a bunch of just somnambulists just walking around having had no sleep. And it's starting everyone, all the public figures slowly are being replaced with brand new body parts. They're swapping everything out. Selena Gomez, as we all know, just had a kidney from a beluga whale that was put inside her.
No, it's her best friend.
Part of this hybrid program they have of turning a pop star water mammal a hybrid program. Well, they're going to have them take over. We know Hillary Clinton has been seen wandering the halls and the aisles of the Whole Foods, injecting papayas with Windex. We know this to be true. And we know the cast of MASH is slowly abducting all the elderly people, making them crochet rocket cozies for North Korea.
Why MASH?
You know all of that.
Alan Alda is a North Korean sympathizer. That's well known. That's well known.
That's not...
Nice.
I don't feel like nice.
Yeah, strong.
I don't feel strong.
Yeah, your hay game is strong.
Thank you,
Ralph. 106.7 K-Rock is K-R-O-Q. You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show. It is 6:52, and Ralph Garman is here for a look at the show biz beat.
It's Monday, so we look at the top 10 movies at the box office. It, for the second week in a row, is number one at the box office. Made another $60 million this weekend.
We all float down here, Georgie. Allie.
Nope.
Hey, Allie.
Please stop it.
Balloon?
Ralph, please.
You want a red balloon?
I don't like it.
American Assassin debuted with $14.8 million. Nice curse, Allie. Well done. Mother, in its debut, $7.5 million.
That's shocking, right?
Mother?
Yeah. I mean, that cast,
yeah, I would think
Jennifer
that
Lawrence
cast...
alone yeah. is a blockbuster lady.
Yeah, people want clowns. They don't want Jennifer Lawrence. Home Again was fourth. It's so funny because the kid, he's trapped there. And he's like, oh,
no, that's
my parents left me here. And then they get in there.
That's Home Alone. That's,
right, this is the sequel. And they come back and they
sequel.
Try to steal the house. And
they already did like four sequels. This is not one of them.
Oh, well, then I don't know what this is. Then. Yeah. Hitman's Bodyguard. Fifth, Annabelle Creation, Wind River Leap, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Dunkirk. Your top films at the box office. Last night was your Emmy Awards. The Academy of Television Arts and Sciences give out achievements and greatness for the year. Julia Louis-Dreyfus broke some records last night.
Yay!
When she won Best Lead Actress in a Comedy Series for her sixth consecutive time.
That's unreal.
That is unreal. And imagine just being someone else who's just happy to be nominated. But in that category, you don't have a chance.
Mm-mm.
No. Veep won again for comedy series. Well-deserved. Donald Glover won for lead actor in a comedy series. Kate McKinnon and Alec Baldwin won for supporting actor and actress for their work on Saturday Night Live. Handmaid's Tale won for best drama. Elizabeth Moss won for lead actress in a drama series for her work on that Hulu show. Sterling K. Brown won for his work in This Is Us. Ann Dowd of Handmaid's Tale and John Lithgow took it for Best Supporting Actor and Actress in a Drama. So congratulations. The big winner was HBO, sat atop the networks, winning Emmys again this year. Netflix won the second highest number of awards with 20. Hulu picked up 10. Boy, the networks are just lagging, right?
Yeah.
15 went to NBC, however, because Saturday Night Live did so well, so...
It was odd that Game of Thrones was not eligible because it was so huge.
Yeah.
And Orphan Black was not eligible, so they'll be eligible next year, and that'll be weird because you go, wasn't that a long time ago?
Yeah.
It's kind of strange.
Highlight of the evening, in my opinion, was the award for miniseries, supporting actress in a miniseries. Did you guys watch Feud, the Joan and Betty story?
Did not watch that.
So good. It was a story of Betty Davis and Joan Crawford and their battle with each other. It was on FX. Susan Sarandon, Jessica Lange played the leads. And the supporting role was an actress, a very talented Broadway actress named Jackie Hoffman, who's a very funny lady. She was up for supporting actress. And Laura Dern won in her category. And Jackie waited till the camera was on her and then started screaming, "Damn it! Damn it!" when Laura Dern won. It was my favorite moment of the evening. And then she went on Twitter, just started taking off on Laura Dern, which I thought was funny. Laura Dern had famous parents. Forgive me for being from real people. Hashtag elitism. Hashtag Emmys 2017. When she lost, she also tweeted, "Broadway is dimming the lights. Hashtag Emmy. Hashtag loser city." Then she tweeted, "I hear that Laura Dern runs a child porn ring."
Oh,
hashtag sore
God.
Loser. Hashtag Emmys 2017.
Oh, my
then
God.
Then she tweeted, "I hear that Laura Dern looted art from Nazi victims."
Holy crap.
She's going crazy.
She's
it
the
was
best.
Awesome. And, of course, because people are idiots, everyone started running her reaction and footage from her reaction saying, "Last night we saw some real emotion, and one of the actresses was very upset."
Oh, come on.
So she had to tweet in her defense, "I hear the media is actually taking my reaction seriously. Are you kidding me?" She had to set the record straight. But
that's
if you
amazing.
If you can find that clip this morning, it's a very funny moment because she's obviously overacting for the camera and knew she would not win. But she's a very funny, talented actress, and that was a funny, funny moment. I want to thank everybody who came out last night to Brea, California at the Improv last night for Hollywood Babylon. Man, we had a good time. We stayed up way too late, but we had a good time. And I want to remind folks that this Sunday we're going to do it again, this time in Oxnard at the Levity Live Comedy Club up in Oxnard. You can go to oxnard.levitylive.com and get your tickets for me, Kevin Smith, Hollywood Babylon in Oxnard, Sunday night, 7 p.m.
No.
And we're going to... We're going to ruin people's Monday mornings again. I bet there's a lot of hungover people.
Are you hungover?
Listening to the show right now. Oh, yeah. Very much so. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthday list. Ronaldo. Hey, Ronaldo, how you doing?
Nice Brazilian.
You play so much with the ball at the time. Don't touch the ball so much with your hands.
He's Brazilian.
You're breaking
he's not,
the rule.
Not Italian.
Oh. He's 41. Lucas Graham, singer Lucas Graham, is 29. Wasn't he? Once I was 7 years old, I went to the road and I turned 14. And
I don't know
then
that
I
song,
was 21. And
I
then
think that's
I got
it.
Older than I was 25. And then I turned 26 and then 27. Remember that effing song?
Yep.
Boy, we played the crap out
played
of that.
Played it a lot,
thing.
Didn't we?
What were we thinking? He's 29 years old today. Once I was 29 years old, and I said a lot of song about getting older, and we got older, and I'm unique. Not really. Everybody gets older, dumbass. Jada Pinkett Smith is 46. James Marsden, very talented actor, is 44 years old. Lance Armstrong, cheating cyclist, is 46. Jason Sudeikis. How much do we love Jason Sudeikis?
All.
He's the best. 42 years old. Aisha Tyler, isn't she coming on the show this week?
I believe so.
47 years old today. And rapper Xzibit celebrates his 43rd birthday. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Watched the Emmys last night.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, there was no real standout moment that has everybody talking.
We're terrible.
No.
We're a little dull, pretty
just,
long.
Yeah, just there, kind of.
All right. We're just okay. Stephen Colbert was the host of the 69th annual Emmys. He started out with a song.
Watch This Is Us. You'll learn it feels so good to feel so sad. With Randall, Kevin, Kate, she probably killed her dad. Stranger Things is much less strange than our reality. Everything is better on TV. I'd like to vote for Selena Meyer.
On and went on, you know. Sorry.
You're not a big song and dance guy.
I mean, it was, no, it's not that. It's that it was good, but not great. There was nothing that really slayed you or really, he was good.
Yeah.
He was fine, but that's about it. Then he was talking about, Stephen Colbert was talking about how many TV shows there are. And if you watch the Emmys, you probably saw a whole bunch of TV shows that you never heard of or certainly have never watched. Mm-hmm. And he said there's only one person who could watch that much TV.
There were over 450 original scripted shows made this year. Of course, there's no way anyone could possibly watch that much TV other than the president, who seems to have a lot of time for that sort of thing. Hello, sir. Thank you for joining us. Looking forward to the tweets.
He was a target for most of the night. If you loved Donald Trump, you probably hated that show. And if you hated Donald Trump, you probably loved that show. But there were sure a lot of Donald Trump jokes in there.
Mm-hmm.
Although there were others. Stephen Colbert then started talking about the diversity in the actors who were nominated.
And there's so many talented African-American nominees. Jeffrey Wright, Viola Davis, Samira Wiley, Uzo Aduba, Anthony Anderson from ABC's Black-ish, and of course Bill Maher. I assume he's black since he's so comfortable using the N-word. I don't know. Good night. That's my time, everybody.
You can hear Anthony Anderson's laugh being picked up on his mic.
Yeah, he was laughing so loud.
He was laughing so hard at that. That was my favorite joke.
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
That was the one fantastic joke I thought that he had.
It was it.
Then he went on talking about Donald Trump and how it's very important about ratings and how many people watch and how would you ever gauge the success of this TV show. And he brought out former press secretary Sean Spicer.
What really matters to Donald Trump is ratings. You got to have the big numbers. And I certainly hope we achieve that tonight. Unfortunately, at this point, we have no way of knowing how big our audience is. I mean, is there anyone who could say how big the audience is? Sean, do you know?
This will be the largest audience to witness an Emmys, period. Both in person and around the world.
Wow, that really soothes my fragile ego. I can understand why you'd want one of these guys around. Melissa McCarthy, everybody, give it up.
You know who was not amused? Melissa McCarthy
was not amused. Yeah, she did not seem to be having a good time. There were a lot of people who were more shocked than laughing and thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if it went over well. It may have gone over well on TV. I thought it was okay, but the people in the room didn't seem like they were necessarily thrilled.
Yeah.
They're very anti-Trump, it turns out. Mm. Who knew?
I had no idea.
Alec Baldwin won Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy for his portrayal of Donald Trump on Saturday Night Live, and they had played earlier in the show a clip of Donald Trump saying that he should have won an Emmy for Celebrity Apprentice, and Alec Baldwin got up, and this was his acceptance speech.
I suppose I should say, at long last, Mr. President, here is your Emmy.
All right, so there was that.
You getting that this wasn't the best show ever?
I mean, is I? There's a lot of... See, here's my thing with politics. I just hate politics because it brings out the worst in everybody.
Yeah.
It just seems to bring out the worst on each side and the worst... I mean, it's just, it doesn't bring anyone together ever, ever, ever.
Yeah.
So I'm not a huge fan of that kind of stuff. They were talking about live talk shows, and Jimmy Kimmel was up for it. Stephen Colbert was up for it.
Mm-hmm.
And John Oliver, last week with John Oliver, won.
Yeah.
And so after he won, Stephen Colbert was in the audience with Jimmy Kimmel, and they were having a drink.
Oh, hi.
Jimmy and I were just drawing a couple of cocktails.
No particular reason.
I'm drinking a specialty cocktail they're offering tonight. It's called The Last Week Tonight.
Now, that's, of course, the name of John Oliver's show.
I got the same thing.
Yeah.
It's a dry British cocktail.
Yes, it's really good. It's so high quality. Apparently, they can only make one a week.
Mine has extra bitters in it. You know, sometimes they put the wrong name on the envelope.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's possible that that happened here, right?
Not tonight.
Unfortunately, not tonight. That was funny. Jimmy was wearing a tuxedo with a fanny pack.
Yeah.
He had a fanny pack on.
Yeah. I saw him being interviewed before, and he was showing all the snacks
in the fanny pack.
He had everything in there. It's a long show. That's smart.
It is a long show. But who except for Jimmy would wear a fanny pack with a tuxedo?
Just Jimmy.
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Our favorite show by far is Veep. And for the sixth year in a row, Julia Louis-Dreyfus won for Best Actress in a Comedy.
We have a great final season that we're about to start filming with a lot of surprises that our fabulous writers have cooked up. We did have a whole storyline about an impeachment, but we abandoned that because we were worried that someone else might get to it first.
I got to tell you, there's nothing she's done that doesn't make me love her.
Yeah.
She seems great. Yeah. Every time she's interviewed, when she gets up and gives a speech like that, she just seems gracious and like she's the best person in the world.
Everyone from Veep that's been in here has just gushed about working with her and how wonderful she is.
She does seem like
the
best.
I want one person, just one, to be like, she's awful.
Why? Why? Because there's just too much good about her?
I'll feel better about life if there's one thing about her.
And then the final clip that I have is for the outstanding lead actor in a drama. It was Sterling K. Brown.
This is my favorite.
From This Is Us, and this is his acceptance speech.
I want to thank my cast. Milo, Mandy, Justin, Chrissy, you are the best white TV family that a brother has ever had. Better than Mr. Drummond, better than them white folks that raised Webster. I love you.
Better than white folks that raised Webster.
I mean, a different Strokes joke?
Sure.
And a Webster joke?
Right. And then, what does he get for his trouble? They played him off.
They sure did.
They literally cut off the microphone and just started playing and pulled the camera back. But that was the 69th Annual Emmy Awards last night. Next hour, Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network and the Red Zone Channel will be here to recap week number two of the NFL. First, Corbett Redford joins us in studio. Welcome, Corbett. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Watched your movie last night. It's called Turn It Around, the story of East Bay Punk. And it's fascinating.
Thank you very much.
When does it start? 1977. And you actually have video from inside clubs where there were punk bands playing.
Tons. Stuff that's never been seen. Even backyards. Green Day, when they're 14 years old, playing, kind of making a video in their friend's backyard.
How did you start doing this show, and how did you get access to everybody that you had?
Well, I went to high school with Green Day. I was a freshman when they were seniors, and they tapped me to come on to do the project because I'm kind of an insider, I guess, in that local scene. And they were the executive producer, so in some ways I made inroads to getting, you know, people like Iggy Pop as our narrator.
Right, which was great to hear that. Like, he's got such a unique voice and a unique delivery.
He's like the Country Bears narrator.
Yes. Yeah,
that timbre to his voice. You know?
Did you have problems getting anybody? Or once they realized Green Day was in and Iggy Pop was doing, like, did everybody sort of fall in line and want to help?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of the people in that kind of underground scene, you know, all they really have are their sacred stories. There's, for all the Kirk Hammetts and Duff McKagans that are in our film, you know, there are about 100 people in our film that nobody knows who they are.
Right.
You know, but, you know, I spoke with Combustion and Conviction, and ultimately, the movie is 2.5 hours long. It's this dense archival thing, but I think there's inspiration and humor, and everybody's included.
I love to see that behind-the-scenes stuff. I love to see these bands like Green Day when they were literally just kids.
Yeah.
And punks. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's just crazy. Here's a little bit of the trailer of the movie.
The bands that we were excited about were our East Bay bands.
It had an important place in the pantheon of punk. It was about playing honest music.
It wasn't always about the band that was playing on stage. It was equally about what was happening in the audience.
Punk rock isn't a sound. It's doing something you're afraid of doing.
That's the East Bay sound.
Turn it around, the story of East Bay punk.
Anarchy night every night of the year. Anarchy night every night of the year. Yeah.
Tim Armstrong.
Let's talk about Tim Armstrong. I love that guy so much.
He's went full Bob Dylan.
Sure did.
He's fantastic in it. He so many people love him in this film.
I feel like everybody loves Tim Armstrong. There's nothing to not like about that guy. He'll show up at concerts all the time.
Yeah.
And he'll walk up to me, and who am I for him to walk up to and say hi? But he does, and he's so happy and jovial, and he just seems like he's genuinely a cool dude.
He's a sincere, artful cat. He lives it. You know, every day he's creating and just so personable, down to earth. Love the guy.
Tell us about the scene in the East Bay. Why was it there rather than anywhere else in the United States?
Well, you know, the birth of punk in the Bay Area was in San Francisco, you know, with the Dead Kennedys and Flipper and the Avengers. But over the Bay, there were all these kids who were inspired by the birth of punk. So they started making these, you know, bands in their garages, in their basements. Suddenly, punk kind of went from being this kind of artful, fun thing. Hardcore, the birth of hardcore, things kind of got violent. Clubs, pay to play, started ripping people off. And so these kids kind of needed an outlet. These new fans of punk who were inspired to make their own bands, including, you know, Green Day, Operation Ivy. And they all came together in this club called 924 Gilman, which still exists today. And the idea was that it brought rules to punk. No drugs, no alcohol, no violence, no sexism, no racism, no homophobia.
All right, let me stop you
right
there.
They made it more inclusive because it kind of started taking this turn towards a little racist, towards a little sexist, and by a little, totally.
Yeah.
And then the East Bay was like, no, let's bring the fun back. Let's make it inclusive, but still have this aspect of punk rock.
Absolutely. For as reckless as it is, it was kind of an antidote to, you know, and then the rise of nationalist skinhead stuff that was happening back then. You know, a lot of these clubs, they weren't okay for kids to go to.
Right. So. And a lot of these kids were getting beat up.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that part of history. You would think punk rockers would be, you don't mess with them.
Right.
But a lot of them were getting beat up and getting picked on and, you know, taking abuse and all that kind of stuff.
Where we're from, I mean, I thought it was very interesting in our film. You can see that over the course of two decades, Primus, Metallica, and Green Day were in the same kind of general nexus of Panola and El Sobrante in Contra Costa County in the Bay Area. They were beat up by the same white supremacist gangs, each of those bands in order.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I thought I wanted to show that in the film that they were all kind of similarly affected for being long hairs, you know, or just kind of outsiders, you know.
We're talking to Corbett Redford, who is the director and the producer and the co-writer of Turn It Around, the Story of East Bay Punk. Putting rules in place for punk music seems antithesis, right? It doesn't seem like it makes sense.
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, when there are these kind of the sound of punk brought a lot of aggression with it. People needed that antidote. And so not all of the kids were super keen on the rules, you know.
I would think that it would be met with a lot of resistance from people that are in that scene.
It was. And I think that, you know, it was super popular when it was born in 77, and that kind of dipped down, you know, and it wasn't.
Because you think of the violence and of the skinheads and all the negative that came with it?
I think so. And also because, you know, it was new and then people were moving on to something else, you know. And so it was the kids who were inspired by punk in 77 that kind of reinvigorated it, you know. And just like when Green Day in 94, when they blew up, it brought lifers to the culture, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, have the major label argument. I would say that, you know, the Ramones, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, these were all major label bands. And, you know, punk is a language of resistance. And as long as people are raising their voice, punk will be there.
I remember when Green Day played one of our early, early acoustic Christmas shows.
Oh, yeah.
And they were much younger, and they were still sort of coming out of that punk scene. And we had it decorated really nicely at the Universal Amphitheater. It was really nice. We had some Christmas trees and some decorations. And I remember very vividly Billy Joe grabbing Christmas trees and just throwing them into the audience. And I was like, what's happening? This is the best thing ever.
Anarchy.
Green Day is literally destroying the stage. And for some reason, I was really drawn to that. But that's sort of them coming out of those roots.
Absolutely. Our film shows that, too. Bands like Isocracy and Blatts. It was this messy melee. Kids would bring the entire contents of a dumpster onto the stage and just throw it out to have fun. And you watch things like Woodstock or the, you know, Acoustic Christmas, and you go, oh, that's where they're from.
Right.
And you see that in our movie.
Yeah, it's a fascinating movie. And I also thought while watching Green Day doing that, I also thought they played the Rose Bowl this weekend.
I know.
Like,
it was incredible.
What are the chances that a band could come out of that scene and play the Rose Bowl?
There was always something there. I saw them in 91 at the Berkeley Square with the Cadillac Tramps. And they, as soon as I saw them, I knew them from school. I ran up to the stage and I said to Mike, he was putting away his bass. I said, "You're going to be so big." A lot of people who saw them early on just kind of knew.
All right, let's take a break. Corbett Redford is here. Turn it around, the story of East Bay Punk, and then we'll pick it up with talking about Green Day back in the day when they first started singing and writing. What set them apart from most of the other bands of that era? That, of course, is Linkin Park, and we have Mike Shinoda coming on the show a little bit later on this morning to make an announcement that I think you will want to hear. That's in the 8 o'clock hour. Right now, Corbett Redford is here. The movie is Turn It Around, the story of East Bay Punk. And when we were last talking, we were talking about Green Day and how I was watching the movie and going through Instagram. And I watched the movie and I saw them as, how old were they in this movie?
14.
14 wow. years old. And then I saw an Instagram picture that somebody took of them at the Rose Bowl. And I just thought, what? How is that possible that a band could come from that scene? And how many people can sell out the Rose Bowl? It's
Not many bands, especially this far into their career, to still be doing it.
I think, Billy Joe was, when he was very young, was a trained singer, had music in the family. I think when I first saw them, I kind of had this sense like, well, something special is here.
Okay, but you had seen all of these other bands.
I had.
There's a lot made about this. The music in the punk scene, not that important. It's partly the music, but a lot of what the audience is doing. And you don't necessarily have to understand what the singer is saying.
Sure.
I mean, it's sort of a strange thing in that the music is not necessarily the most important thing. It's sort of everybody's experience that's in the club.
People would say that, like, the band Operation Ivy, which was, the early kind of Rancid incarnation, that it was less about the band that was playing on stage and more about how everybody would show up. That band would bring everybody out. And then suddenly the entire community was there. And people would start zines and they would have conversations and start new bands. And so I guess it was less about the bands and it was about the people.
And how was Green Day different when you heard their songs? It was the song structure?
Something about the kind of the pure talent. And coupled with, I think, that working class ethic, a lot of their mothers were, truck drivers and waitresses. And so they kind of applied that mentality to their band. So if we're going to be kind of, artful, creative people, we're going to work, So that, I think it's that talent plus the work ethic that led to the explosion.
Did you notice that their songs were songs? In a more traditional sense
yes.
than a punk song.
You could hear the voice. You could hear the words. You could hear the, songs of, Broken Hearts and Disillusion. There was something that, bands like Operation Ivy, too. Like, the messages of unity. And I think that was one thing that was different about East Bay Punk, in spite of kind of the broken equipment and, the volume. You could hear a message in it.
Let's talk about it, Rancid. Let's talk about Tim Armstrong and that whole group. I mean, he's awesome. We just talked about that. What was their band like back in the day? Was it did you see a quality in them that you didn't see in a lot of other bands?
Absolutely. Matt and Tim were the kind of paramount musicians of that era. And so when they started their new band, it was like nothing else in the scene, and just. I don't know. I think they're probably two of my favorite musicians in the world.
Yeah.
They took it to a different level. They didn't sound, a lot of the bands in that early East Bay punk scene sounded like the Ramones or something, but they kind of went like the stiff Little Fingers Clash route,
Right.
And then with the addition of Lars Fredriksson, his harmonic lilt and his just energy, there was kind of no stopping them at that point. And then out come the Wolves. And then you had this, another East Bay band that just lit the world up,
Right. Let's talk about some of the other people that you have in the movie that are talking. Let's talk about Noodles from The Offspring, for example, and other musicians.
Noodles came up from Los Angeles to Gilman up there in Berkeley. They just loved the scene there, so enough to where Gilman was a second home to them. Duff McKagan, A lot of people don't know, you know, he has the punk roots. He was in the Fastbacks in a band called The Farts, you know. And so he has this real deep understanding of punk rock, you know. Kirk Hammett was from our region up there. And so, you know, the Green Day kids and you know, they would down the street, there would be, oh, Metallica plays in that garage, you know.
That's so amazing.
And Primus plays in this garage over here, you know. And so it was... I kind of sometimes people ask me, what is it about the East Bay? I'm like, maybe it's something in the water. I don't know.
There's no answer to that, is there?
Well,
it's just that it started there. And so everybody sort of that was drawn to that went there.
Maybe. I mean, Steve, the list, this show calendar guy from the East Bay says on the nautical map that the coordinates are 666, man. So you know,
are they really?
Yeah. So we try to figure it out. But, you know, and you've also gotten that same general vicinity bands like, you know, YMT or Creedence or, you know, even Night Ranger, you know.
All so. Right. Now you're
I'm talking. Sorry. I'm sorry.
I lost you. Yeah.
Did you just say Night Ranger?
Yeah.
They came up in that scene?
Yeah. No, they were in that general area, neighborhood. Kind
I see.
Of, yeah.
But they didn't come up in that scene because
no,
Night
weren't
Ranger.
Punks. Yeah. So, no, but I guess what I'm saying is that a lot of these punk bands that are in our film kind of grew up, you know, around these other bands
right.
that were there.
Huge influence.
Yeah, that are, like, close by in, like, this tiny suburban town right next to theirs.
So what year, basically, is what years does this cover? Turn it around, the story of East Bay Punk. Is it 77 to...
Like, 94, and then we kind of visit today. Gilman Street, you know, 30 years later, is still there.
What's it like today? Is it the same?
It's still the same. You know, it's a non-profit music collective. First and third Saturday, 5 p.m. every month, people from 7 to 70 get together, and it's kind of like if everybody had a microphone and everybody had a decision, you know, or everybody had a voice, you know, which is very difficult.
It's very difficult, and it could be terrible.
Yeah, maybe everyone doesn't deserve that microphone.
But it'd be terrible.
At Gilman, everybody gets the microphone, and it's still there. 30 years
wow,
on.
That's crazy.
And it's providing a place for young people, all ages people, to come together and to create freely without kind of the fear of getting beat up or ripped off.
Now, you have awesome. You have some screenings tonight at the Arclight Hollywood. 8 p.m. is sold out with a question and answer.
Mm-hmm.
8:30, almost sold out with question and answer. And then you just added an 8:45 screening. Tickets are still available for that. And you will be introducing the screening.
That's correct.
We're going to give away 5 pair of tickets to people that want to go right now if you're interested in this movie. And trust me, it's great.
Thank you.
And if you like the punk era and anything about that, it's really fun to watch. Turn It Around, the story of East Bay Punk, tonight at Arclight Hollywood. We will take the first 5 callers, 1-800-520-1067. If you want to go, you can see a screening of this movie tonight. And when does it come out on VOD for everybody else?
I would say in the months ahead. It had an unexpected...
Months or month?
Months.
Oh,
yeah.
Come on now. Speed
well,
it up.
We started in 30 theaters, and now it's over in over 100. It's kind of like this unexpected thing. So it's still in
you
theaters.
You want to ride that one out.
It's still in
sure.
theaters, yeah.
All right.
But it will be in VOD. It will be DVD, Blu-ray, all details at our website.
Now, is it, and your website is what?
EastBayPunk.com.
EastBayPunk.com. All right. We appreciate you coming in. I really enjoyed the movie.
Kevin, Ali, thank you so much.
Corbin Redford, thank you for being our guest today. We appreciate it. 106.7 K-Rock is K-R-O-Q. You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show. It is 7:52.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Siciliano from the Red Zone Channel will be joining us in the 8 o'clock hour to talk NFL.
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait for that. Right now, Ralph Garman is here with a look at the showbiz beat.
That's right.
Oh, by the way, also in about 8:30, we're going to talk to Mike Shinoda from Linkin Park.
That's true.
Who has an announcement for those of you fans.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ralph.
Just doing a lot of confirmations this morning. Working
appreciate
on my confirmations. It's Monday morning. That means we look at the top 10 movies at the box office. It continues to top the box office charts for the second week in a row. $60 million made it number one.
I hate it.
Double A.
I love it.
MCO.
American Assassin debuted with $14.8 million. Mother was third. Debuted 7.5. Home, again, Hitman's Bodyguard. Those are top 5 films. Annabelle Creation, Wind River Leap, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Dunkirk were your top 10 films. They're doing another Halloween sequel.
All right.
Jamie Lee Curtis broke the news on Twitter Friday when she had a picture of herself standing on the porch. Said, same porch, same clothes, same issues 40 years later, heading back
to Haddonfield one last time for Halloween. Release date October 19th, 2018. So it'll be out next year around this time. John Carpenter, the man responsible for the original film, is connected to this one. He's going to be a consultant on the film. And Mike Myers, of course, will return one last time. They say this is the last one, though. This is it.
This is it, though.
When they say this is it, they mean this is it.
Right.
No.
This is it. This is it, Allie.
I don't.
This is the final.
This is it. This is really the final curtain call. And when I say this is it, it really means this is it.
Do you think this is it?
Michael Jackson was right when he said it was
it. Oh, wow.
It was true, right?
Too soon.
Really? Is it?
Too soon.
I thought this was interesting. A website called 24/7 Wall Street. They tried to put together a new index to base on what are the greatest films of all time.
Okay, new index.
Yes. Instead of just taking critical responses and movie scholars and asking them, they took an average critics rating from Rotten Tomatoes, an average audience rating from Rotten Tomatoes, and then the Internet Movie Database average, and combined all that data into a list of what they determined to be, across the board, with critics and fans alike, what are the top 10 films of all time.
Okay.
Favorites. So I thought it'd be fun to play the game to see if you can come up with any of the names in the top 10
Little
films.
Nicky.
Little Nicky not in the top 10. Mm. Not your top 10, Kevin. Try to think about what people,
oh, people
who like good movies would like. Try to pick those titles instead. And we'll see if we can narrow down the top 10 according to this list of the best movies of all time.
Allie, go with your favorite, Godfather.
Godfather.
Number one.
Thank you.
The Godfather, number one.
And rightfully
so. You've never seen it.
Oh, so when he's like,
you knew that Jamie Lee Curtis was killed in the last Halloween sequel, but you've never seen The Godfather, so you can go right to hell.
I really can, yeah.
That was number one. Critical and fan acclaim alike. People saying The Godfather is the best film.
Ernest Goes to Camp.
Okay. And if that's how you're going to be, then I'm not going to screw around with you.
How about, I'm trying to think, Rocky.
Not in the top 10.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It'd be in my 10. Nope.
What about Shawshank?
Third. Nice. Shawshank Redemption, number 3.
Oh.
As greatest films of all time.
Are we going too old, or are we about in the right area, but just not getting the right ones.
We're in the right area.
Okay.
It's the one with Rosebud, and she was a sled.
She was a sled.
Citizen Kane.
Now, usually that's like a critical, scholarly pick.
But
because they factored in the audience love in this one, it did not make the top 10.
All right.
I'm going to go with Star Wars.
Not in the top 10.
Oh.
That's absurd.
You're absurd.
Any of the Star Wars movies not in there?
No.
Okay.
Because, again, there's critical aspects of this, too, so you had to balance. If that had been just fan favorites, that probably would have made it. But
then, The Holiday would be on.
No, it would not.
No? Okay.
Malibu's Most Wanted.
Okay. You know what?
Pulp Fiction.
Oh, good.
Pulp Fiction, fourth on the list, Allie. So far, Allie's gotten 1, 3, and 4, and Kevin's just been a dumbass.
I mean, I've been entertaining.
Have you? Let's see what the critics and the fans say on that list.
Let's not.
See where your,
let's not ask.
Your jokes fall in the top 10 of those lists. There's some you just won't get, like number 7, 12 Angry Men, one of my favorites. You would never guess that.
Yeah, I would never.
Number 10, Sunset Boulevard, another great film you probably would not think of right away. Mm-hmm. But the rest are certainly gettable.
Bucky Larson.
Okay.
What is wrong with you?
There. The second one, you should have gotten because you got the first one, Godfather Part 2.
Oh, sure.
Right. That's when the horse head was in.
Nope, first one.
Or first one. So then they brought back the horse.
Did not bring it back. There's no bringing back the horse.
So weird.
Schindler's List was 5th.
Okay.
The Dark Knight was 6th.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
12 Angry Men, as I mentioned, number 7. Goodfellas at number 8.
Sure.
Number 9. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson.
Oh.
It's a great film.
Okay.
And Sunset Boulevard, as I mentioned, number 10. So there you go.
An Emoji Movie, number 11.
Okay.
I probably don't have that on the list.
All right. Mm-hmm. Sunday night, Kevin Smith and I are doing Hollywood Babble, and this time in Oxnard, California. We're going up north. Yeah, we're going up north. Go up and join us. hop on the 101 and come up to Oxnard and see us at Oxnard Levity Live, as the club will be at Sunday night, 7 p.m. for Hollywood Babylon.
No way. No way. Get real.
You're going to be there. I know you. You say no.
No way.
You say no, but you mean yes.
No.
Today's celebrity birthdays, Ronaldo. Hey, Ronaldo, how you do? You're not making no pizza no more. You and your mommy, you make all of the time at a kick of the ball.
He's not
You're
Italian.
You're kicking the ball all the time, Ronaldo.
He's Brazilian.
Oh.
Yeah, very different.
Hmm. Yeah, 41 years old today. Is he still playing?
He's not.
He's not playing?
No.
And why are we talking about it? Let me cross him.
Because
off.
He's yeah, a legend. Who cares? He's a legend. He's one of the best ever known soccer players in the world.
Ronaldo McDonaldo.
That's his name?
Yep. Lucas Graham is 29. Jada Pinkett Smith turns 46. James Marsden is 44. Lance Armstrong, cyclist extraordinaire, or one bald cheater? You be the judge.
Or both.
46 years old. Jason Sudeikis is 42. Aisha Tyler celebrates her 47th birthday. She'll be on the show later this week. And Xzibit, rapper Xzibit, celebrates his 43rd birthday. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Andrew Siciliano joins us in the studio. Andrew, welcome.
Good morning.
Host of NFL Network's Up to the Minute and DirecTV's Red Zone channel, on which you do a fantastic job.
Thank you.
But don't tweet him if your Red Zone is out. He can't help you.
My.
Wait, right. You can't help
Were
him?
You guys all saw that yesterday?
You can't help him?
I mean, so I have... For years, suggested a skit, a commercial, a bit. Honestly, I just want the residuals for when they play during college football Saturdays, where I host the show on Sundays, and I also have one of those customer service headsets on, and I'm answering
like
phone
Judy.
Calls,
yeah.
Right? But obviously, you don't want to suggest that there are customer service issues because you're trying to get people to subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
There are no more customer service issues there than anywhere else. There was a little thing yesterday where some people weren't getting it, but a lot of it was confusion because we have two different price tiers for Sunday ticket.
Okay.
So there's Red Zone. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. There's Sunday ticket where you get all the games, and then there's Sunday ticket max where you also get Red Zone and bells and whistles and things like that.
But if you just get the base one, you don't get Red Zone regardless. So
correct.
Stop trying to log on and get it.
But Andrew can get it for you if you'll just tweet him.
Well, right. And people think that, and listen, I enjoy the audience participation. However, I'm not the call center.
Right.
I need to focus on hosting the show.
I mean, some things going on.
There was just a little blip of an issue yesterday.
Right.
And as much as I would like to help, I can't say, hold on. Hey, control room. Bob in Des Moines has been holding for 20 minutes.
And you wouldn't respond to my texts. I kept texting. I'm like, I forgot my password.
My phone's
off.
And
I need help with my password.
Does he know your password?
No, but he could get someone to help.
In the future, if you could email me.
Okay.
My computer is on.
All right.
But I turn iMessage off and my phone gets shut down for those 7 hours. Hi, I knew you guys were going to go there. I love you guys.
I just found it funny.
I thought you were going to give me crap for saying San Diego Chargers.
Well, I mean, I did tweet that one. That was great. But here's the thing about that.
Everyone's done that one now.
Yes.
Yes.
Sounded perfectly fine. I didn't even notice until you corrected yourself.
Well, they got in my ear and they said, L.A.
It's not San Diego.
L.A. And they said it like three times and I felt like going, shut up, let me finish my thought, then I'll correct it. I didn't say that. So I finished my thought and I said, did I say San Diego?
Well,
if you go up the 5 to the 405 and get off at the IKEA, then you'll find this game. This is Carson,
right?
California,
and you handled it like a pro.
Well, and the other thing too is I kept saying Carson, and I think some Charger fans. I got a couple of tweets. Well, you keep saying Carson, like suggesting they're not a real LA team. No, I had to say Carson yesterday.
Well, that's where the stadium is.
Because they were both playing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the Rams were on the road and they were playing at 1 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Pacific, and the Chargers were the late game at home, I would probably say let's go to LA.
Right.
But when you're bouncing back and forth, and those are two of the four options with the Denver game and in a weather delay, I had to distinguish between
right.
the two. This is Carson and this is LA. Like with the 49ers, I say this is Santa Clara.
Right.
You know, they're not really in San Francisco. They're not anywhere close, actually.
It's like an hour away or more.
Yeah, with traffic.
Seems like you take a lot of crap from fans.
Listen, I love my job, and I love our fans. I love it. I love it. I love it. Not dwell on the negative, but yes, people do get upset when we linger on a game too long. They think I'm gambling on the game. I don't gamble. They think I have a fantasy guy. Here's the thing about fantasy, guys. I love my fantasy. I have zero emotional connection to my fantasy team.
Right.
I will never linger on a game because of a fantasy player. And another thing, why would I? I have them all on one giant wall.
Right.
I'm rarely looking at what we call program, what's actually on the air. Matter of fact, I never look at it unless I have to when we're doing a transition. I'm watching the giant wall, and 9 out of 10 of the transitions where we go between one game or the other, I never look at the program monitor. I'm looking at those two up there, and then I have to look over my shoulder to make sure we get it on the air.
Those of you that haven't seen this yet, the red zone is basically a 20-yard line or closer to the end zone line, and every single game that gets into that area, Andrew covers, and you go out of your way to explain to people there is no live action right now. All of the games are in commercial,
mm-hmm.
So we're going to show you some highlights and see if I can get a lot of that.
Well, yesterday we dropped in a Peyton Manning, like, fun Sunday ticket fantasy little skit.
Right. Saw that.
Because there was nothing. There were no games.
Right.
And it's fun. It's Peyton. Mm-hmm. Yay, Peyton. And we ran it. I don't pay for commercials.
All right, let's talk about the Chargers. Since we
I love our viewers.
Since we started talking about the Chargers, let's continue with them. And do they already have a new kicker or?
Not yet. They likely will. And after the game, Anthony Lynn, their head coach, you still like Anthony Lynn, right? You asked if he was hot last week.
No.
Yeah, you did.
Rams.
You're talking about Sean McVay. No, we're talking about Sean McVay.
Yeah.
But then
I
said, and then you said to me, I think we could probably check the tape. You said to
he
me,
asked about
what?
Him, but I don't think you.
Yeah, you said, well, what the Chargers head coach? And I went, yeah. No?
No.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
Kicker.
Anyway.
They get up. They have a 44-yard field goal.
Young Wei-Koo. Yeah,
to win the game.
Uh-huh. And he missed it.
And he kicked it far enough just off to the right.
All right.
Left,
so
right.
Poor kid. Chip's arms are in the air because she's a Dolphins fan.
Right.
Poor kid. He was a really good kicker last year in college. He is a rookie. And he missed the kick Monday night. Remember, exactly a week ago, right now, at this moment, I sat here and said the Chargers find new and creative ways to lose every week.
Right.
And hopefully with a new coaching staff, that won't happen. It has not changed. Here and they
a week ago his kick was blocked.
Well, the first one was good, but the Denver coach Vance Joseph had called timeout to ice him, and so it didn't count. And then the second one was blocked. This one he just missed it. So you would argue that if they had a kicker, they might be 2-0. Now last week,
right,
it would have sent it to overtime.
Okay, and so they may have won.
They may.
It's possible. Yeah.
But you could argue that if they had a kicker, they would be 2-0. He's a kid. He's a rookie. He's cheap. After the game, Anthony Lynn was asked, are you going to get a new kicker? He said, we are always looking to improve.
Oh, sweet.
So I feel for the kid.
Here's the thing. I do too.
If he gets whacked here, he'll get another job. He will have a nice career.
The thing is that you have one job.
You do have one job.
And there's not a lot of room for error in that job in the NFL.
But let me tell you this. Phil Dawson, who is the Cardinals kicker, right? Your team.
Yes, sir.
As good and as reliable there is in the game. I mean, there's Adam Vinatieri and there's Phil Dawson when it comes to veteran kickers. He missed one yesterday that would have won it.
Right.
He got iced as well. But then he eventually did win it in overtime.
Right.
So even the veteran kicker can have that bad day. But this kid had two bad days in a row, and they are 0-2 as a big reason.
Yeah,
it's one of the big
reasons. That was a very makeable 44-yard field goal.
Yes.
And they would have won the game on that. And that hurts.
So
that hurts
the stat to go with the snark is that the Chargers have now lost 11 one-possession games since week one last year. So 11 games of 8 or fewer points.
So basically they were in a position to win all of those
or tie.
Games. Yeah.
Or they're 11 times since week one of last year. No one's even close. I think the Jaguars have done it 8 times. The Jaguars are a horrible team. So, yeah.
How about the Rams? Let's talk about the Rams.
How about the Rams? So, I mean, look, they had one possession game as well.
Are they for real after last week?
Last week, the question was, are they for real? I think we sat here and said they're close to for real, a lot closer than they were last year. But I don't know that they're 46 points for real, which is what they scored in week one. They were in position yesterday. They get the ball back, a minute to go, whatever it was, with the timeout, and Goff gets picked on the first play. That was bad. He looked right at Mason Foster, threw it right at the Redskins linebacker, and the game was over. They made too many mistakes. Here's the encouraging thing from yesterday.
Is that Todd Gurley can jump over any defender that's coming at him?
This was the Todd Gurley from 2 years ago. This
was
the Todd Gurley, honestly, that I don't think L.A. Rams fans saw last year.
Right.
St. Louis, we saw him 2 years ago.
Right.
L.A. Rams fans, this is your Todd Gurley. And he was leaping over. He leapt over two guys.
Two different guys.
Two different dudes. I always think,
man, that's putting your junk at risk right there. Because if you don't clear that defender coming at you.
Yeah, that's a helmet in your junk,
and
right?
There have been incidents like that.
Oh.
I'm sure it's on the YouTube. Check it out.
I don't want to see those.
look, honestly, the big test for me now. If you had told me they would lose to the Redskins, I wouldn't be surprised. Redskins are kind of an enigma to me. They lost badly, or at least on a bad call, I think, week one. They were coming out here. This game meant a lot to both staffs because Sean McVay was their old Redskins assistant.
Right.
The big test now for the Rams, for me, is what do they do Thursday? Because they have to play Thursday in Santa Clara against the 49ers on NFL Network, by the way. And that's Jared Goff's hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not really, but close enough. It's his first real game in his hometown against the team he grew up rooting for.
Does that mean a lot of pressure on a quarterback, or does he...
It's whatever you put on yourself.
Whatever he lets
his family's going to be there. Remember, week one they played up there last year, but he was not the starter, so really no one came. He told his friends and family, don't even come, basically.
I'm on the team.
I'm not playing. Okay. Like this isn't a big deal. Everyone's going to be there for him, and now it's a short week. How do you bounce back? Thursday games are
after
tough.
Sunday. Yeah, that's tough. It's a tough turnaround.
They are tough. Now, I think the short trip, I mean, the Rams won't go up there until Wednesday night. It's a lot easier. They can actually do a couple of days of work and then take a 5 o'clock flight, whatever it is, on Wednesday night.
Right.
But that, to me, is the real test. We'll find out more about them this week than we did yesterday.
Andrew Siciliano is here at K-Rock, host of the NFL Network's Up to the Minute and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk Raiders and more on K-Rock. Andrew Siciliano is in the studio with us, host of NFL Network's Up to the Minute and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. Andrew, let's talk some Raiders.
Hey, they're 2-0.
2-0 in good fashion, 45-20 over the Jets.
Yeah, the Jets are bad. The Jets aren't going to win a game.
Not one single game.
So we were debating this yesterday. We'll get to the Raiders, but we were debating this in the studio. I don't know now, the cynic in my ear from the control room, our producer who is actually a Jets fan, Bill Wagner, said no, they're going to beat the Browns. I don't think so. The Browns are a better team right now than the Jets. Clearly, it's not even close. The Jets are horrible. Like, horrible. Like, potentially 1-15.
Wow.
Horrible. That said, the Raiders are 2-0, and that's all you can ask. And their first game, going on the road to Tennessee last week and really beating down on the Titans, that's the impressive one.
Yeah.
This one you're supposed to win. But it was kind of cool to have Marshawn dancing. You saw that, right?
Wasn't that great?
I mean, he was losing his mind on the sideline.
He was home, it felt like. He felt like he was home. He was really having fun.
His teammates said afterwards, and they put it on the Jumbotron there. Yep. Then all the fans got into it.
All the fans started dancing.
One of his teammates, because I'm getting old here. I don't use the word turnt.
Oh.
T-U-R-N-T.
Okay.
What? Don't look at me like that.
Go ahead.
Did I sound really old there?
Continue.
Really?
Go on.
Well, come on. Go ahead, Allie. Beat me up.
No, go ahead.
Continue.
One of his teammates said that Marshawn got the place turnt.
Right.
And then the whole crowd got into it. And by this point, the Raiders are up
I don't
like
think it's an
touchdowns.
Old thing. I think it's just you can't pull it off as a person.
No, you pull it off.
Neither can Kevin.
Nor can I.
You're older than me. Go ahead.
I don't think it's an age thing.
No, it's not an age thing.
Nope.
I can't pull off normal words, so I'm not going to try turnt.
Turnt.
I'm not going to try that.
Turnt.
They
got turnt.
He was so good.
He won't stop saying.
Am I over enunciating turnt?
And not only was he dancing, but he was running back in.
He was running over people. He scored a touchdown. That was only his second. So he's from Oakland, for those who don't know. Oakland's his hometown. That was only his second career game in Oakland. He had played there once in like 2010 as a visitor. He had never played there not including the preseason. He played there in August.
Let's talk about him as a person, because a lot of us only became sort of aware of him with his "I'm just here so I won't get fined."
Mm-hmm.
But before that, reporters were saying he was entertaining and just a blast to be around.
I mean, he's an interesting dude. He's extremely charitable.
Right.
So first and foremost, he wants to play in Oakland. As a matter of fact, he said he came back out of retirement. Remember, he sat all last year out. Mm-hmm. When the team announced it was staying in Oakland for at least another year or two,
right,
or three, because he wanted to play in his hometown before the team left.
Oh, really? So he's not making the trip?
Well, it's 3 years from now. He's right. A 31-year-old running back. Who knows if he's going to be around? But he right. wanted to be here for Oakland. He does crazy things in the community. I mean, crazy good things in the community. He hates talking to the media. And when he does, he drops F-bomb after F-bomb after F-bomb. We got caught on live TV.
Is that because he knows that you can't air that? And so that's
because he wants to curse on television.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, he wants to.
He's a Raider.
He wants to curse on television. He embraces it.
Right.
You want to see the real Marshawn? Watch the video that Conan did before the Super Bowl a couple of years ago.
Yes,
remember that? Where they're playing Mortal Kombat, I think with Gronk. Was it with Gronk? Was it Marshawn against Gronk?
It might have been.
I think so, yeah.
Or Conan against Marshawn, something like that. And that's the real Marshawn Lynch.
And what about when he was live in Scotland doing reports?
That was amazing stuff as well.
Unbelievable. He's so funny.
To have been a fly on the wall when he was a student at Cal.
Oh, dear.
In the classroom. You're
suggesting there wasn't much studenting going on?
No, Marshawn's actually a really bright guy.
Yeah, right.
My point is, I would have loved to have been in that classroom when he was a student at Cal. He's on camera admitting that when he got drafted by Buffalo in the first round, and he said, "Where's Buffalo?" and they said New York, he thought New York City. Legitimately, he thought New York City.
Aww.
But
look, I'm the wrong guy to make fun of that, so I'm not gonna.
I love him to death.
Yes.
I love him to death. I also thought, look.
Let me ask you a question. Why does he hate the press so much?
I don't know.
Why is it so bad for him? I mean, I know that because he's such an entertaining guy and you see him in different situations being entertaining. Why not with the press? Why doesn't it transfer over?
I don't know. I can't answer that. He's sick of the cliched questions.
Right.
I honestly have no idea.
I mean, the truth is interviews with athletes are all cliched questions and all cliched answers. That's just
a lot of them.
Yeah.
Look, he's insular. He does not need that outside. He's all about that action, boss. That's an exact quote. And he doesn't want to deal with it. Look, the Raiders won, and they're 2-0, and he was turnt, and the crowd got into it.
I feel if you slow down on it, it doesn't help.
But I'll say this. This is a fascinating social experiment between fans and team here. Because, look, the Raiders are like, they have a divorce with Oakland. Okay?
Right. Pending.
But a pending divorce.
Right.
They're separated.
Right.
And they're just like, they're sleeping on the couch. Honey, I know we're getting divorced, but can I sleep on the couch in the basement until I find another place?
Right.
And that's what they are right now, but they're winning.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which changes everything.
Right. Injuries happen. Not wishing them on anybody. Bad thing. Look, seasons take turns. What if the Raiders were awful this year? Unexpected, but it happens. Then what? This is a fascinating social experiment between team, city, fan base. This has never happened in North America. I don't know where it's ever happened, where a team announces it's leaving, but do you mind if we sleep on the couch for a couple of years?
And then is great so far.
Now they are.
Yes.
Now they are. I mean, imagine if the Sonics left Seattle and said, can we stick around for a little bit? Or if the Browns were leaving Cleveland. Can we stick around?
Yeah, that's a little
awkward.
The
Colts were leaving Baltimore. We're going to go to Indy. But by the way, the Mayflower vans will just stay in the parking lot for 3 years. We're not filling them up yet. This never, ever, ever happens.
Yeah.
And through 2 weeks, it's working really well for the Raiders. I'm just fascinated to see how it works.
If they don't keep winning. Winning is fun for everybody. That covers up a multitude of sins.
Or what if they win the whole thing, then?
Yeah, because then the fans are more upset that they're leaving.
They already have a deal in Vegas. It is done. And they've said a Super Bowl is not going to save us in Oakland. But what if they win?
Wow. That'd be fascinating. Could they?
They could.
If they were able to avoid injury, like most teams really get decimated by injury throughout the season, but it seems like the teams that are the healthiest end up winning.
I'll tell you right now, if Derek Carr had been healthy in the playoffs last year, if he had not broken his leg Christmas week, they go into Houston and win. Everyone agrees that.
Right.
So then what? Would they go into Foxborough and beat the Patriots?
I was nervous. I'm not going to lie.
You were nervous?
We could only hope so.
Okay, and this team got better in the offseason. It added, you would hope so, right? I mean,
I'm right here.
Right. Oh, that's right.
Oh, is that you? They added Marshawn. They've gotten better.
Yeah, they have. They're a good team. All right.
I think Marshawn is just going to make it just feel good up until he leaves. And the team leaves. And then Marshawn's like, sorry, guys, did what I can. Hope you enjoyed the last couple of years.
Oh, that is exactly what he would
but
do.
But that's perfect for him. Perfect for him.
I love it.
I was up there for the NBA Finals for the Warriors and the Cavaliers in June. Walking outside that arena, and for those who don't know, the arena is next to the stadium, right, in Oakland. And walking outside that arena, it was all Marshawn Lynch jerseys. If you weren't wearing a Warrior jersey.
Right.
There was Marshawn Lynch jerseys, and the bridge between the arena to the BART, they were selling Marshawn Lynch jerseys every kiosk, That's every awesome. Stand, every vendor.
I like it.
That's awesome. All right, Andrew Siciliano, we always appreciate you taking time. I know it's your day off, so getting up and coming in here, we totally appreciate it.
Also, I finished Ozark. You guys are like the TV gurus. I need a new show. Give me a new show, please. Tweet at me. I don't care. I need a new show.
You need a new show?
Yeah.
All right, Friends.
Nope.
Sorry.
I hate canned laughter.
Andrew Siciliano, host of NFL Network's Up to the Minute and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. You're the best. Thank you for coming. Appreciate it. We welcome Mike Shinoda to the show. Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Hi there.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, thanks.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Tell us about the event that you're going to have. Because I know, let's start with the fans. Let's start with the fan celebrations and the fan artwork. Talk about that some.
Yeah. Okay, so, it's been 2 months since Chester passed away. The fans have been incredible. I mean, I don't think we could have ever expected such an outpouring of love and all these tributes. I mean, there's tributes. There've literally been tributes all over the world for 2 straight months. If you're on Twitter, fan sites like LP Association, LP Live, LP Catalog, these guys are covering, they're basically retweeting and covering all these things. And two things happened, I think, from us seeing all that stuff. And the guys and Chester's family were deeply moved by all this stuff. And one thing was that they all gravitated towards this track on the album, the title track that you just played, One More Light. And in fact, like the day Chester passed away, we were releasing a video and about to gear up for a different single, which was Talking to Myself. And the fans, like, you know, they listened to that one, but they really just chose this album track.
It's sort of timing-wise, everybody was like, this is the one that we need right now.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it's, you know, once in a while in our career, we've had different songs that have connected with the fan base in different ways where they just naturally, organically call radio stations and request it, and they tweet about it, and they edit their own videos of their own, you know, stories or their own, you know, in some cases, things like their own successes, their graduations, their successes. And in some cases, it's been sports and stuff like that. And in this one, they were, you know, fans everywhere were making these montages of images of Chester, images of themselves to this song. And so we realized that it had struck a chord with them, and we wanted to let them know that we see that, we hear that. And so we made it the official single, and we just did a video for it, which went up just minutes ago, I think, maybe an hour ago.
Yeah, it's on your Twitter page. If people want to go to Linkin Park, they can check out the video there.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what you guys have been through in the past 2 months, but I can't believe the fan interaction that we talked about before. You guys have always been this band that did so much with the fans, from having them kind of take the place of PR in different cities, different countries. It has to have been just so beautiful to have that kind of taken off of you guys, that they're going to handle the tributes for this time while we regroup?
Yeah, I mean, it's been that, and I think, you know, the song One More Light, we had written it at a time, we wrote it to in an effort to, like, reach out to people. It was a message of, like, we'd had a few different people in our lives. This was, like, a year and, like, almost like a year and a half ago. A friend of ours who worked at the record label, who's worked on our stuff since forever. I mean, she was like, she was a kind of a lower mid level employee at the label mm-hmm. when we met her, and then she kept getting promoted, and she was just such a great person and did such a great job for a lot of bands, but ours being one of them. And then just suddenly she passed away from cancer, and we wrote. That like struck me, and I realized that we had lost some family members and friends and stuff all in the course of like a year and a half. So I was in the studio and wrote One More Light, and so it was really the key lyric in that is the chorus goes, "Who cares if one more light goes out?" And the punchline is, "I do."
Yeah.
And the whole point of it was written to say, like, you know, in times like these, you can't, there's oftentimes not a lot you can do for somebody who's hurting, but you can reach out and say, hey, I'm thinking about you. I care. Right. Maybe. And sometimes that's enough. So we wrote that song. We Chester sang it. And it was initially like a intended to kind of reach out to somebody who had lost someone. And now we find ourselves on the receiving end of that, where the fans have taken our own song and played it back to us and let us know that they're there, they're listening and they're thinking about us. And it's been really, I can't stress enough how special and what an important role all of that has played in getting through this. I know that not only the band, but also Talinda, Chester's wife and his family, have felt the same way. It's hard. It really is hard to listen to that song.
Right. Talinda's been posting pictures and some video, and some of his kids have been posting.
Oh, by the way, it's Talinda's birthday, you guys.
Happy birthday,
Talinda. Yeah, everybody wish her happy birthday. Go on Twitter, go on Instagram, wish her happy birthday.
She's awesome. Tell us about, a lot of times fans are brokenhearted for you because they've formed a bond with you and the other band members, and a lot of times it feels like it's tough to get to an artist, but you guys really do pay attention to the fans that send you stuff and that post stuff. And they were able to get to you.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely, we've always been available on social media. And I think that we've, in some ways we try and, kind of like guide our Linkin Park culture, our community, to so that there's some sense of like what's the right way to do it, you know.
Right.
Like Chester always used to joke, like he would tell people in interviews and stuff, like he'd just tell them outright, like, if I'm having dinner with my wife, that's the wrong time. And you know, like if we're saying goodbye at the airport and crying, like, yeah, maybe wrong time.
Right. Maybe read the room a little.
So funny. And I think that it's been really sensitive. It's been really tasteful, and we've reposted things. We've included, we even for the lyric video for One More Light, like we just reposted a fan video. Like they made this beautiful lyric video, and it had typos in it and like wrong lyrics. We were like, should we fix those? Like they did such a good job on it. Who cares? Like let it go up with lyric problems and whatever. Like they did. You know, as they say in, like, I have kids who are, like, little, and they always tell kids in kindergarten, your work doesn't have to be perfect. You just have to do your personal best.
Right.
I say that to Kevin.
Like, this is very much, like, a personal best kind of thing.
I say that to Kevin every day,
Mike. Yeah, Kevin, I know. The whole crew over there really encourages Kevin to just do all he can.
It's tough, Mike. It's very tough.
I know. I feel for you.
Listen, tell people about your event at the Hollywood Bowl.
So, yeah, I think I said earlier there were two things that came from the interactions with the fans. And one of them, by the way, the second thing is was kind of I'd gone to Rick Rubin as a kind of a source of, like, you know,
wisdom?
Kind of guidance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And said, you know, he said, I know you guys know this, and I know it's obvious because I know you're looking at social media and stuff. You say, I think you guys need to get on stage. I think that's going to be the thing that'll feel good. It'll be super, super hard. And
up till this point, you haven't done it, right?
We haven't gone out together in public. We haven't made any, you know, we haven't played.
Right.
We haven't gone on stage. And he said, you know, the fans want to see you. But most importantly, not because they want to see a show. It's like there's a cathartic experience that needs to happen. And I think it'll inform, you know, what you guys are doing. And I thought it over, and I know that for some of the guys in the band, getting on stage is more scary than other guys in the band. But I will say that for all of us, it's definitely the thing that we want to do. It's the, you know, it feels like the right way to celebrate Chester, and we want it to not be, so the real, guess like meat and potatoes of the whole thing is, we decided we're going to have a show in L.A. It's going to be October 27th at the Hollywood Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do it with, you know, we're inviting some other friends. That list of guests will be, it's still coming together. It's not announced yet. So that's more to come on that part. But we are going to be playing Hollywood Bowl October 27th.
And as Linkin Park and friends celebrate life in honor of Chester Bennington.
Yeah. And I do want to point out just like that with something like this, like, and it was the same at his funeral. I know that the circumstances of his passing were really dark. And that, you know, as we said at the time, the darkness that he had like was always there, and it was kind of part of the package. But what was so unique and special about this guy is that he used it as fuel to do so many positive things, and he really put in, he did so many, his overall, like the way he was so, he was such a happy guy. He was such a fun guy. And when he'd walk in the room, it's like, it was such a like positive, funny, upbeat energy. And that's what we want to get out of this show. Like, I know it's going to be a roller coaster of emotion, but I do, you know, when we talk about this and when we're focusing on the show, it's really about, like we say, celebrating life.
It's Linkin Park and Friends Celebrate Life in honor of Chester Bennington, Friday, October 27th at the Hollywood Bowl. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. at Ticketmaster, or you can go to linkinpark.com for the pre-sale.
Mm.
And this sounds like it's going to be a great event. It's October 27th again at the Hollywood Bowl. We also have a pair of tickets to give away right now. If there are any Linkin Park fans listening that want to go to this, 1-800-520-1067. We will take caller 20. Mike, it's great to hear your voice.
Thank you.
We're glad that you and the guys are doing well, in spite of, and that you're moving on, and we are looking forward to the Hollywood Bowl. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
We appreciate it.
Thanks to everybody listening, too.
Thank you. It is 8:54. Ralph has stepped in now for a look at the showbiz beat.
Because it's a Monday morning, we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office, see what is the top of the charts, and sure enough, there it is again, right?
Right?
Yeah.
It?
Yep.
Yep.
You got that right.
Yep.
It's the number one movie at the box office. You know what it is?
Yep.
It's it.
Yep.
Right?
Because you're just using the name of the movie.
This is so much fun, isn't it? Isn't it fun?
Is it?
Define fun.
It is fun to refer to it. And you don't know whether I'm talking about it or it.
Your face.
I'm hungover. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
$60 million made it number one. American Assassin debuted with $14.8 million. Made it number two. Mother? Debuted with $7.5 million. A lot of people saying that's a honked up film right there, that Mother. I haven't seen it yet.
I've not seen it either.
People are saying it is rough. Home Again, fourth. Hitman's Bodyguard, fifth. Annabelle Creation, Wind River Leap. Spider-Man Homecoming and Dunkirk. Your top 10 films at the box office. Lost some goodies over the weekend. Harry Dean Stanton died on Friday. Spanned more than 60 years in his Hollywood career with more than 140 film roles, a lot of television stuff. Everything from Molly Ringwald's dad and Pretty in Pink to Repo Man and Alien, The Brain and Escape from New York, Twin Peaks, Big Love. He's just on the Twin Peaks The Return series not too long ago. We still have another film of his yet to come out. In September, he's got another role. But 91 years old, one of the great legendary character actors, passed away. And Bobby the Brain Heenan. If you're a wrestling fan, you know that name. He was the manager of wrestlers like Andre the Giant, Ravishing Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, King Kong Bundy. Passed away at the age of 73.
So is the nickname The Brain now available?
It's all yours. It's all yours, Brain.
Good Lord.
It's funny because Harry Dean Stanton played Brain in Escape from New York. That's his character's name. And then Bobby the Brain Heenan. So brains are dying.
You're in luck.
Kevin's safe. If all the brains are dying, Kevin's going to live forever. Right? Who's with me?
I am.
I'm with you. He doesn't even know what I'm talking about.
He just said, I'm with you.
See, that's what I'm saying.
I'm all in.
Speaking of dying, did you hear about the location scout for Narcos?
Unbelievable.
No, I didn't.
He is a guy who works with a lot of production companies. He was a guy who worked with a lot of production companies that filmed in Mexico and helped them find locations in that country to shoot. He worked on Fast and Furious and Apocalypto, Man on Fire, Sicario. And he was working for Narcos, looking for locations near Hidalgo, Mexico, when apparently ran into some guys from the cartel.
Ooh.
Didn't care for him nosing around, and they took him out. Authorities say there were no witnesses.
Wow.
Due to the remote location of the murder, but that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Maybe just shoot in Upland or something. Just make that show somewhere else.
I don't think you need to go to the hills of Mexico.
It's Hollywood. Go to the backlot Universal.
Right. Go to Salt Lake City. I don't know. They film a lot there.
What?
I don't.
Salt Lake City doubling from Mexico. Go to the whitest place in the world and say that's Mexico. Why don't you do that?
Just try to help.
Could you help a little less?
Yeah, it's on. Unfortunately. Okay.
And this season of American Horror Stories triggering a lot of people, a lot of panic attacks.
Uh-oh.
Because one of the main fears on this show, the phobia featured on this show by Sarah Paulson's character, is trypophobia. You know what trypophobia is?
Look at her face.
It's the people
fear of tripping?
No. No, brain. It's the people who have that intense irrational fear of small holes, clusters of small holes together.
I've never heard of that.
Yes, you have. We've talked about it.
Doesn't mean I heard of it. I've never heard of that.
We did a whole segment on it.
I was out that day.
No, you
like
weren't.
The sponges, what it
and
looks like, even beehives.
Oh, I do remember that now. Okay. All right.
Then you have heard of it then.
I'm back.
So you've heard of it.
Yes, sir.
Where'd you go?
So, in fact, you've heard of it. That whole thing where you were saying you had never heard of it,
right.
You had, in fact, heard of it and participated in a conversation about it.
We'll edit that right out. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. By the time this hits the air, it'll be fine.
And we're live.
What?
Those lotus flowers, you know, that have all the holes. And then there's, like, some photos. They've dummied up photos, like people's hands and stuff with the holes in them. Yeah, a lot of people are freaking out because a lot of those images will be featured in the upcoming season of American Horror Story.
They already have. It's freaky.
Is it already on?
Oh, yeah. We're on episode 3 this week.
Oh.
We already met the neighbors last week. I'm telling you, good things are happening.
Why are you watching this show?
It's the best.
But it's not. Look at you. You're freaked out by it.
You guys.
It's sort of not the kind of thing you watch.
It is.
It is.
My friend Leslie's on this season.
Oh, okay.
But I was going to...
Is Swampy on?
He is not.
Oh,
But Leslie plays one of the neighbors. She's married to Billy Eichner. It is... Wow! It is freaky.
Is she
so many
with
clowns.
Small holes?
No, but last week, he's a beekeeper, and he pulled up the beehive.
Oh, no.
And Sarah Paulson's character, Allie, had a minor freak out.
Don't you hate when your neighbors are beekeepers?
Right?
Oh, I'm tired
it's
of
so
that.
Old.
It's
that
so
old
good.
Trope. That old
Chip and I are watching.
LA
it's good.
Situation. Anyway, people are weirded out by holes.
I feel like I need to catch up on that now.
It's so good.
I've never talked about it. I don't know. I've never heard of it. I'm the brain.
That's already been edited out, Ralph.
No, it has not.
Okay.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Lucas Graham is 29 years old today. Once I was 29 years old. That freaking song. By that freaking guy. Jada Pinkett Smith is 46. James Marsden is 44. Lance Armstrong turns 46. Jason Sudeikis is 42. Aisha Tyler, who will be on the show later this week, is 47. And Exhibit, the rapper, is 43. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show this beat.
106.7 K-Rock is K-R-O-Q. Congratulations to James Yanez from Long Beach. Just won Not Scary Farm tickets, a four-pack of tickets. Keep listening for your chance to win. It is 23 minutes after 9 o'clock now on the Kevin and Bean Show. Nice.
Woo! Woo!
You're joining the Hands of Fury with that.
I've got a very successful solo clapping career. I don't need your little band. Okay?
9:35, time for a final look at the showbiz beat. Here is Ralph Garman.
It's a Monday. You know what that means? Sucks. That's what it means.
Right.
But I'm going to make it suck a little less by giving you something right now. Tickets to the K-Rock advanced screening of American Made.
Yeah!
American Made! Make away from me! American Made!
I don't think that's how that goes.
No. It's happening at Pacific's The Grove Theater, September 26th. Movies in theaters everywhere on the 29th, but you, my good friends, will get to see it before anybody else. It's Tom Cruise. Sarah Wright. Looks awesome. One of these, based on a true story, behind-the-scenes stories of a regular American being sucked in by the CIA to, you know, move a little for the cause, right?
Yep.
No, it works. That's how they do it. Suck you in, man. Oh, you're helping out America. You're behaving for your country. Boom. Next thing you know, you're flying drugs.
Oh, no.
This looks great.
That Tom Cruise. He's a good actor. If you want to check it out, give us a call right now. 1-800-520-1067. First five callers through with that number. We'll get a pair of passes to the K-Rock advanced screening of American Made. Speaking of movies, it's a Monday, so we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office. It, for the second week in a row, is the number one movie on the box office chart. $60 million made it number one. American Assassin. American Assassin!
Nope.
Assassinate me!
I don't think that's how it goes at all.
Debuted at $14.8 million. Kevin loves Assassins, we know that.
He did say that.
I love movies.
I love Assassins.
No, you
movies
actually
and
said,
video games.
I love
what
Assassins.
You said at all, though. You
I
said,
mean,
I love Assassins.
I may have said that poorly.
Mother! Debuted with $7.5 million, made it number three. Home Again was fourth. Hitman's Bodyguard was fifth. And Annabelle Creation, Wind River, Leap, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Dunkirk, rounding out the rest of the top ten. Sad news, legendary character actor Harry Dean Stanton passed away on Friday. Smoked like a chimney, drank like a fish, died at 91. Come on!
That's the way to live.
Awesome. It's just, it's whatever genetic hand you're dealt, right? Isn't that a lot of it?
It is. Part of it.
Yeah, I would think so.
He said towards the end of his life, he was eating just to smoke and stay alive, he said. It's the only reason he really ate meals anymore.
Just to smoke.
Ugh. I'm with him. That'd be so awesome. It's like 6 months now I've quit. It just every day just sucks.
It doesn't suck a little less
no.
as you go, really.
Because I get up, you know what I'm not doing?
Yeah.
Not smoking.
Right, but don't you feel healthier?
Oh, no. I just feel less smoky. Speaking of obsessions, peanut butter Twix. Did you know this was a thing? This is a mania. People are nuts for peanut butter Twix. They're back on the marketplace. They've been gone for a while, but now they're back. And I think Twix is effing with us. I think they're starting to screw with us.
Are you?
They said they apologize that there aren't more peanut butter Twix available. And we're not hoarding it just for ourselves, but they are in limited release. And they're encouraging fans to share the locations of where
on.
To find them with the hashtag, found new Twix.
Just make them. Right?
If you want to buy them on Amazon, you can get 18 Twix in a package for $35. That's the price they're going for these days.
I can wait.
Can you?
Yeah.
Or can you?
Yes, oh. to that as well.
Okay. Emmys were last night. HBO was the big winner amongst the networks. Netflix was second with 20 awards. Hulu picked up 10. NBC, in terms of the broadcast network, was the big winner with 15 Emmys, led by Saturday Night Live with 9 wins. But it was Big Little Lies and Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale that tied for second place with 8 wins for each of those shows, including Nicole Kidman. She won. Saturday Night Live had a good night. Kate McKinnon won for Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series. Alec Baldwin won for Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy Series. That's a bit of a cheat, though, don't you think?
Yeah, because it's just a character.
And he shows up
every
couple episodes or something. Yeah. It's like a guest star thing almost. But still, can't deny the
success and the power of that performance all year long. Donald Glover won for lead actor in a comedy series for Atlanta. Julia Louis-Dreyfus broke the record. 6 Emmys in a row for lead actress in a comedy series for work on Veep. Veep also won for outstanding comedy series. Handmaid's Tale won for outstanding drama series. Anybody watching that Handmaid's Tale?
I have not seen it, no.
Hulu? Elizabeth Moss, she won for lead actress in that same project. Sterling K. Brown, I know, Allie, you're a big This Is Us fan.
Yeah.
He won for that. And then Ann Dowd won for Handmaid's Tale and John Lithgow in the supporting categories.
Stephen Colbert said early in the show that it's impossible to keep up with all the TV that's on now, and that's very true.
It is.
As you listen to that list, you go, okay, I haven't seen that, I haven't seen that, I haven't seen that. Who's got time?
It's nuts. Rolling Stone magazine, stuff of legend, right? In terms of music publications?
Sure.
What's bigger? Well, it looks like Jan Wenner, founder of that magazine, is selling out finally. New York Times says that his Wenner Media recently unloaded Us Weekly magazine. They got out of that business. Men's Journal magazine, they got rid of that. And now it looks like Rolling Stone is next. Wow. Right?
Right.
Getting out of the Rolling Stone business. Magazines just, there's no magazines anymore.
Yeah. They're going away.
It's over. Internet has replaced them. It's kind of sad. Here's a song called On the Cover of Rolling Stone about musicians desperate to be seen on that magazine. Because at one time, it was the biggest, highest honor you could get as a musician. Now? Right? Nothing.
Both. Yeah.
Zero. Zip. And before I leave you, I do want to give you just a little cautionary tale. It's not really about show business. It's a little life lesson. You know me. I like to impart life lessons.
Sure. That's what you're about.
I don't care how lonely you are. I don't care how desperate you are, gentlemen, for affection or sexual pleasure. Do not involve any part of your genitals with a plate, a weight plate from a weightlifting set.
No.
You know a weight plate? A plate?
Yeah.
A plate you put on the bar when you're lifting weights?
Has
a hole in the center of it?
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't engage with that.
Okay. Right. Does that need to be said?
It does. Because
what?
Take it from this guy in Germany. Who had to call the fire department when he realized he had gotten his man parts stuck in the middle of a gym weight.
Oh, no! This is a colossal disaster!
Mm-hmm. Was it a man in Germany or was it a man in Seattle? That's the question. Oh, he would never have a weight. What am I thinking of?
It'd be ridiculous.
Authorities say they're not sure what made him put it there. They're not. But it took firefighters 3 hours to get him to the hospital, to have him sedated.
Oh, my God.
And then to have the plate removed with an angle grinder, saw,
dear,
and a hydraulic rescue device. So I'm just saying, don't hump your weight plates.
It's good advice,
I mean, that
Ralph.
Is good advice. That's solid.
That's my advice for Monday. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Lucas Graham's 29 years old today. Jada Pinkett Smith is 46. James Marsden turns 44 years old. Lance Armstrong's 46. Jason Sudeikis is 42. Aisha Tyler's 47. And Xzibit, the rapper, is 43 years old today. Happy Cheeseburger Day, everybody.
Woo!
Happy Cheeseburger
Day.
Yeah!
Ralph, is it a good sign at the end of your showbiz when Muggs walks in and just pulls up the mic? Always.
It depends on what he's talking about. Are you talking about the Habit?
I am talking about the Habit,
it's,
Ralph.
It's National Cheeseburger Day.
All right.
And Habit dropped off an S-load of burgers. I just had one, man.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Boy, they're pretty spectacular.
Are so good.
I don't know that we need to hear you eating it.
Now you're ruining it for everyone.
I will say this about the Habit. They were told that I don't eat cheese, and I was told, hey, Allie, they're going to bring one without cheese. And I thought, yeah, they say that all the time. They did, and I ate it, and it was really good.
Great story.
Thank you.
Great story, everybody.
You
how about Allie McKay?
Yeah.
Right? That's a professional.
I'm just saying,
right
they listen.
Wow.
And they care
so
about...
you got a sandwich with no cheese on
they
it.
They care about my meat needs.
Hulu should turn that into a series.
Right?
Next year's Emmys.
An Emmy next year.
Ate a sandwich with no cheese.
That's the name of the series?
Elizabeth Moss.
I actually have some useful...
cheese eater's tale.
Useful information.
Oh, what's that?
Yes, okay. Today...
Since when?
How dare you, Kevin? Today at The Habit at 3829 Torrance Boulevard in Torrance, I'm going to be down there with the K-Rock promo crew starting at 11. The first 106 people to show up in honor of National Cheeseburger Day will get a free Habit Charburger.
Wow.
And
you get a free burger just for showing up?
Yeah.
Muggs is going to try and claim all 106 of those.
I'm going to change disguises. He's going to put on, like, beards and glasses. Oh, hello, old chap. Yes, I'm number 102.
And check this out. We're also going to give somebody a chance to win tickets to see Prophets of Rage in the HG Radio Sound Space on Thursday. So,
all right.
The Habit, 3829 Torrance Boulevard. I'm going to eat my burger.
Thank you, Muggs.
Don't. Turn his microphone off.
On your drive home today, let's do a commercial-free 5 p.m. hour random act of helpfulness from the SoCal Helpful Honda dealers tomorrow morning. An all-new Kevin and Bean show, The King of Mexico is bad.
Oh, I'm rad.
We'll tell you why.
I'm rad.
We're also going to talk to Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner on the program tomorrow. And we've got your four-pack of passes to Not Scary Farm as well. We'll see you then.